The following program is created for informational purposes only and does not constitute as medical advice. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the host. If you think you may have a medical emergency, consult your doctor.
This is where the healing begins.
This is Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne of Greenwood Family Chiropractic, where it's not only about neck and back pain, but a place for whole body wellness. Listen this hour as Dr. Leanne is here to share her wellness education to help you live a maximized life. For more information, visit GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Good morning. Thanks for joining. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. That's greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today our topic is stress, which... I want you to become a master of stress. I want to give you tools for managing stress, kind of breaking down some actionable steps on how to help understanding stress. I think we've always viewed stress as a really negative thing, but in reality, short-term stress is actually a really helpful thing on the body. Acute stress is really good for the immune system. There's a lot of reasons why our body has these really good short-term stress. But I do feel as if what we typically view as stress is more of like medium or longer terms of stress. And that's where stress can have its benefits. But long-term stress is really where it becomes something that's negative to our bodies. And I feel like I've not talked a lot about stress because I don't feel like it's something that I have personally mastered very well. I have three little kids, a husband who is a police officer. He is still doing military obligations. So, for example, you know, he's been gone for weeks at a time on top of all the other loads of things. So it's just businesses and all the, you know, life stuff. Like, it's all, you know, you look at it and it's all perspective. And so that's kind of one where it's like, man, we've all managed through. And I think that's kind of where it's the goal of managing stress and what that is and what are some methods to be able to manage that. And so that's inevitably one that we're going to talk about today. So, and it is one of the five essentials that I feel as if we, and by we, I mean I, probably don't I address the least here on Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne Schluter, which you can get on podcast too if you didn't know that, freedom95.us or the podcast platforms. But so our five essentials that we look at it from Greenwood Family Chiropractic, number one is max mind, nervous system, oxygen and lean muscle, nutrition, detoxification. So we look at all of these different aspects. So it's figuring out like what inevitably does that look like? And you're like, absolutely, here you go. So we're going to dive down into that. But before we do that, let's talk about some news.
Dr. Leanne's Health News.
Some studies suggest that too much sugar can literally mess with the brain.
Health News Now, one of the world's most commonly prescribed medications.
Today, the average American consumes 22 teaspoons of sugar a day.
Protesters say they just should not be forced to get this shot, not by the government.
For today's Health in the News, how to think like an Olympian and develop a winner's brain. That was a great approach and thought process. So they talked about a winner's brain is not a quick fix. You have to nurture your brain and take care of it. This comes from psychologist Jeff Brown, who's an assistant clinical, here we go, an assistant clinical professor at the Harvard Medical School and co-author of The Winner's Brain, 8 Strategies Great Minds Use to Achieve Success. I love this. You have to feed it good fats like omega-3s. Your brain is 3 pounds that you don't want to lose, says Jeff Brown, who is a sports psychologist for the Boston Marathon. Where do these people get? These are such unique jobs. He said, you have to move it. Brain function improves if you're moving. That's one of the best things you can do for your brain. And you have it to sleep. Sleep is crucial to memory consolidation and learning. Mental strength, focus, and resilience don't come without effort, even to the world's top athletes. Researchers have studied Olympians for decades and found that they share some of the common traits, habits, and qualities that you can use to develop a winner's mindset. So view stress as positive. I thought this was very interesting. Many Olympians, especially the extremely successful ones, view stress as a challenge instead of something they should fear. They talk about, we call it stress mindset or your worldview of stress. Research on high-level swimmers in England who were all capable found the swimmers who performed best viewed stress as a facilitative versus a debilitative in terms of movement. Any elite athlete knows there's going to be pressure, and top athletes have learned to view it as a challenge, either by trial and error or by working on mental training, such as staying in the present. That's a lot of implication for everyone, they talked about. They talked about a famous experiment published in January of 1998 report, looked at how people viewed stress and found the risk of premature death rose by 43% for people who viewed stress negatively. Those who viewed stress as a positive had the lowest risk of death of anyone in the study, even lower than people reporting very little stress. I want you to understand that. So you could have someone that walked in and said, I have an incredibly high stress. Like, my stress is through the roof, 20 out of 10, just crazy. But if they viewed their stress positively, as something that was more facilitative, then they had a lower risk of death. And people are like, I'm stress-free, man. No big deal. I think that's really interesting. The researchers concluded that it wasn't stress that was killing people. It was a combination of stress and the belief that stress is harmful. The researchers estimated that over the 8 years they conducted the study, 182,000 Americans may have died prematurely because they believe that stress was harming their health. Another aspect about winner's brain, developing a winner's brain, is learn to bounce back. Many of the most mentally tough and resilient athletes have a history of overcoming adversity in their past. It can be a hardship, an illness, even a death of a loved one. It's really hard to build resistance unless you've been challenged. So they said, if I protected you during your whole life and never let you figure things out on yourself, you're bound to be stressed when you hit an obstacle. I feel like this is such an aspect of raising children, right? Simone Biles is a good example of an athlete who faced very public adversity and bounced back. She pulled out of the final team Olympic in 2020, if you guys remember the Tokyo Games, due to twisties when her brain and her body stopped seamlessly communicating, as she had done in countless nearly perfect routines. Anyone can be overwhelmed. Resilience is the piece of us that allows us to get up every single time we're knocked down. He said, I think Simone has shown that she really handles stress well and is a lot more resilient than people who ever ran into that as well. They talked about the connection between adversity and peak mental performance is so strong that, in fact, a lot of the sports performance coaches use pressure training to help their athletes prepare for competition. So obviously with an athlete's permission, the trainers ratchet up the pressure, almost like they're giving you the utmost of fear and then letting your antibodies build up psychologically. So the trainer then puts the athlete into increasingly more challenging situations where they need to trigger those antibodies. So the goal is to practice all the ways a mental and physical performance can go wrong and then fix them. So screwing up on purpose develops an inner voice that can immediately say, okay, I've got this mistake before. Here's, I know how to fix it. So in highly functioning athletes, the ability to bounce back has been as good as their ability to perform. Another aspect of figuring out how to develop a winner's brain is to learn to bounce back. Another aspect is banish self-doubt. So they have to, when you're talking about like amazing athletes, they have to believe they're capable of performing well, or they have already given the competition the advantage. I think this is so interesting. Okay, hold on. I'll tell you a story. They have to go into the event with complete confidence. Now, I know that I'm not talking about like a super high level athlete. I'm talking about my elementary school son who is in wrestling. And what was so interesting is that it was such a great learning lesson for him, because I don't remember what. He was just being a kid with a bad attitude. And we walked into a wrestling meet and he was like, oh, it doesn't even matter, I'm going to lose. And not really because he thought he was going to lose. Like, it wasn't as if he knew that there was another wrestler that was better than he was, or he just walked in with like just a cruddy attitude, right? And if you're moms and dad or coaches, like you have kids and you know, like they just have to get out of that mindset. And I tell you what, he walked in and he kind of gave it a shot and he lost. And he lost every single one. And I said, hey, when you walk in there with the mindset, I'm just going to lose, I don't know why I'm here, guess what happens? He's like, I lost. And I said, have you ever lost every single match anytime before? And he goes, no. And I said, what was the one difference? You walked in there with a bunch of self-doubt. I thought that was crazy. If you're looking at the mindsets, like Olympians do mindfulness training. Were they not, you know, you have to think physically, these people have to be skilled to get where they're at. But any sort of top level athlete goes through so much of a mind strengthening, you know, mindfulness, visualization. There's just such an aspect more than just the physical skill. And regulating your emotions, right? All of us have a set of emotions we feel, and they're important to us for us to perform our best, right? Being confident but not overconfident, being anxious but a good anxiety, fearful but not overwhelming. You know, there's an optimal mixture of all of the emotions that allow individuals to perform at their peak performance. And obviously practice, you know, it's just one. And I feel like a lot of these are applicable in life because of, you know, if you're going into a big meeting for a job or a job interview or a performance review or just your day to day, when we look at this and we're like, hey, gosh, that was stressful. Oh, we do something at the end of every day. It's called good things at the office. Reason being is because, you know, a day is going to happen and there's going to be highs and there's going to be lows and there's going to be aspects of hardship and things that are really awesome and fun. But the big picture is picking our heads up, looking around and being like, hey, I was able to make it and here's what I did better. There's a book called Feeling Forward, which makes me think a lot of this like winner's brain. Is that if you take your failures in life and the things that maybe haven't gone as well or as planned, and your big takeaway is how to move or parlay that forward, I think about that's just really where, you know, you have the ability to make that choice on how your path goes. That's just overall, it's very interesting. So when we come back, let's talk about what is stress. But then two, what's a stressor versus actual stress? Is there a difference? I'll tell you what it is next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. Hear full shows on the podcast link at freedom95.us. Here's Dr. Leanne.
I'm wishing you Godspeed, glory. There will be mountains you won't move. Still, I'll always be there for you. How I do, still, I'll always be there for you. How I do.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter. Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Often individuals will ask me what an initial appointment looks like, and it is different for every single person. Now, I would say what I would love to address, one of the main frustrations is that, no, I can't tell you what you need when you call me over the phone. Hey, I want to schedule an appointment. What do you need? I don't know. Hey, I have a toothache. What is this going to take? And you're like, I don't know. That is literally the purpose of the initial exam. Hi, I just woke up like this. Like, I had a guy who came in and was like, oh, I just bumped my head. By the way, you actually had a pars fracture in your lower back when you bumped your head. So yeah, that's why we do that. Can you just pop me on the table real quick? And another guy, severely degenerative. So there's all of these aspects where, you know, why we're so successful and why I stand greatly behind what we do is that we will do a comprehensive initial exam and consultation. I want to know what's going on. I want to know what you've tried before. I want to see what aspects I can best help and serve you. And that takes an initial exam. Then from there, we figure out, do we need x-rays? Do we not need x-rays? We get you adjusted and then figure out, like, depending on same day or next day, depending on if we have to take x-rays. And then what we do is we formulate a plan, an individual plan, where we can see what your symptoms are, what your spine may or may not look like, how you adjust and respond to that adjustment. And then we say, okay, here's what we think: frequency, time, cost, insurance, out of pocket, whole nine yards. So you'll know time and cost wise before anything happens. But no, so the individual who wants to be mad that you call my office and I can't tell you that day exactly what it's going to take, it's because we still have a little bit more objective findings to be had. So that's kind of what. So you'll always know time and cost wise before anything happens. Initial exam and consultation is $40. Right? And we'll still let you know, like, what does that look like with your insurance? So there's no surprises. There's no surprises when you come with it. But no, we're actually going to do our due diligence for you specifically to figure out what's going on. GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. Now, let's talk about stress. That is our topic today. Master of managing stress. That's what the show title needs to be. Not mastering stress. No one, you know, stress is kind of just like a generic term. Like, what is stress? Stress is a generic term the body uses to turn on what it needs, turn off what it doesn't, and stimulate the body and move to action. Here's what I think is really interesting. We have our sympathetics and we have our parasympathetics. Our parasympathetics are our rest and digest. So that's often one why individuals might have bowel movements in the morning, right? After you eat, right? After you have a meal, that's another one. Because your body is utilizing its digestive system. You have this rest and digest. That's your parasympathetics. Now, your sympathetics are your fight or flight. So those are kind of the aspects where best example I have is kind of archaically, imagine you're being chased by a bear. Your body's like, oh gosh, I'm literally going to die right now. So you have this adrenaline surge and your body puts all of its blood to like focus. You're not going to try to poop when you're being chased by a bear. So the body's like, oh, digestive system. We're not really too concerned right now about that digestive system. Like, we just want to make sure that we can run and we can run as fast as we can. Right. So that's where pupils constrict. This is one where I've talked about before. It's been a little bit where I talk about in modern society. What we do now, though, is we literally mix the fight and flight with the rest and digest. You know, we're eating dinner in our car, we're midday work, we're trying to scarf down a meal really quick, and then we can't figure out why we've got all of these digestive issues when in reality we're not honoring our kind of rest and digest while we're actually putting food in. We're just like, it's like, and I feel like I can say that only because I'm in the midst of, you know, a bunch of small kids and a bunch of sports who have practiced multiple times a week and then games on the weekend that we're literally going from point to point to point. And this is just my consideration on why meal prep is so important. But short-term stress, I mean, there are some aspects of short-term stress that we can try to manage. I think the hard part is that we can't control all the external world. But we can and should at least try to do our best to control how we respond to these things. I think that was so interesting about our health in the news article is that, you know, these people who have this absolutely amazing winner's brain, they view stress as a positive. They view stress as something that is facilitative versus something that is more debilitating. And why? It's just the way that they view stress. Here's what's really interesting is when you talk about stress versus stressor. So stressor is something that can be physiological. So like difficulty balancing work and social life. It could be something physical, like a stressor. Like if you have a small child and you say, hey, put your coat on, it's cold outside. And they say, no, I'm going to go outside without a jacket. Like being outside in the cold without a jacket, that would be a physical stressor. Stress itself is psychological or physiological response to that stressor. So the stress system doesn't distinguish between physiological and psychological stressors, right? So a mental stressor might feel the same on the body as a physical stressor. So you might not be outside for hours at a time with negative 30 degree wind chills with no coat and no socks. But when you put your body in this psychological stressor long term. So when we talk more about the stress response, we have one that's kind of a generic. We have another one that pushes what we need or turns off what we don't. And the last one stimulates the body to move to action or to say something. That's a lot of your fight or flight. You know, interesting, when I was newer into practice, small business owners, I feel like your soul will feel me on this, is that small business owning is not for the faint of heart. And so I was going through trials and tribulations, successes and failures of opening up Greenwood Family Chiropractic the first couple of years. And I remember doing, it was one of my first functional medicine tests. I did it on myself first. And I looked and I was like, oh goodness, my adrenals, which are what, cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, a lot of your fight or flight chemicals, was just burnt out because my body saw opening up a business as a massive stressor, which adrenaline that, you know, adrenaline is what, where like a mom or a dad flips over a car because their baby is underneath it, right? Like your body can do these amazing things. So when adrenaline is released in the body, it liberates killer cells from immune organs to combat and suppress incoming infections. If you're no longer able to sleep, you're leaving good short-term stress and entering harmful, more long-term stress. I always think about this stress with like sleep, and you're like, oh, your body's stressed. You probably just need more sleep. And you're like, new moms and dads, how does that work out? And you're like, that's not a real thing. You're like, it's a season. When we talk about more midterm stress, medium stress can be days to several weeks. This, a lot of managing midterm stress deals with raising capacity, right? Like your stress threshold, if you will. So this is your ability to cognitively regulate what is happening in the mind and body. Midterm stress, medium-term stress. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to tell you. I found this wonderful article. Let me finish this about breathing and breathing techniques, which I don't want to say that I've always thought that that's just kind of hooey, but this is really interesting research. A point of deliberate stress would be a sprint, a cold shower, a fast bike. Like, you have to make your mind comfortable with the response. So basically, you put like a little bit of stress on the body. This is one too. Okay, I'll tell you this. This is one where oftentimes people like get a really good workout in, right? If you're at, gosh, you know, I just had this really heavy project at work. You know, it would be best, and what your body probably doesn't think of. Go for a sprint, and if you're like, I can't sprint, you can do like a really powerful power walk. Or a fast bike that doesn't need to be something that's jarring on any of the joints. But it's one, what it does is it relaxes the mind while the body is active. So what once felt like a lot becomes more manageable. The brain is so interesting how it works. I said I was going to kind of circle back. So I was reading this article. Let me see where it was published. This was published January of 2023. It was published in Cell Reports Medicine. Brief structured respiration practice enhances mood and reduces physiological arousal. Let me tell you what that means, because that title is quite heavy. So what they did is they took individuals and they went through all of these different types of controlled breathwork practices as a management, like a potential tool for stress management and well-being. So they looked at three different daily 5-minute breathwork exercises compared with an equivalent period of mindful meditation for over a month. So 5 minutes once a day. Mindful meditation is just like being quiet. So not really just like slow breathing, quiet, but nothing like forced from a breathing aspect. When they looked at the different breathwork exercises, the three that they specifically looked at, which were cyclical sighing, which emphasizes prolonged exhalations. I'll kind of walk through all this. The second one they did is box breathing, which is the equivalent durations of inhale, breathwork, retention, exhalation. And then three was cyclical hyperventilation with retention. So longer inhalations, short exhalations, and then holding it. The endpoints of this, the goals were improving in mood and anxiety, as well as reducing physiological arousal, right? So this is more of the measurable aspects, respiration rates, heart rate variability. It also looked at sleep as well. And so, okay, so let's break it down. Physiological breathing. So mindful meditation, which was just 5 minutes of natural, uncontrolled breathing. So this is just like quiet breathing in and breathing out, 5 minutes. Cyclical inhalation was a deep breath in and then doing just a little bit more and then out for 2 full seconds. So 5 minutes of this, which is kind of crazy. So like a 1 second in, another quick one, 2 out. Box breathing is just a 1-1-1. So an inhale for 1, hold for 1, exhale for 1, hold for 1, right? So box breathing, that's box breathing. And the last one, which I thought was really interesting, was cyclical hyperventilation with retention. So 30 times they would do 2 second in, blow it out for 1, in, 30 times, and then they would hold it for 15 seconds. So they got a baseline measurement 2 days before and they started this, and they tracked state of anxiety, heart rate variability, resting heart rate, respiration rate, sleep, and then typical heart rate, zero to 29. And then they did from day 29 to 31, all of their post-study measures. And so overall, what they found was that breathwork practices, particularly the cyclical sighing, so that was the like the forced exhalation, was significantly different from the mindful meditation. So they found overall there was a change in respiration rate. For that, it was not changed for any of the mindful meditation or the other ones. No significant changes were found in heart rate variability or resting heart rate over the course. And they didn't see a difference in sleep. But what they did find was overall stress, and that it helped with, in the moment, more slowing down the heart rate. So it was just an interesting one. So if you have this kind of short-term stress, and it might be something you're experiencing more as like a long-term stress, but in the moment feels like more of a short-term stress, that's one. So again, an actionable step that you can take is the inhale a little bit more, and then, and you do that 5 minutes. And here's what they found too, is that the individuals who actually saw out the entire 1 month and then progressed forward saw the greatest amount in terms of elevation in their mood, their mental health, just an overall aspect of, from like a physiological standpoint, the positive effects changed more so if they actually did that for a full month in terms of decreasing state of anxiety. Now, when we come back, long-term stress and possible supplements to help manage next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. Videos, tips, deals, and more. Find Greenwood Family Chiropractic on Instagram. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. That is greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today we're talking about stress, how to be managers of stress. Because, you know, we all got through 2020 together, which means we were very much put through a stressful situation, which is kind of what we talked about. Short-term stress, we talked about medium or mid-term stress. Remember, stress does have its benefits, but long-term stress is where it becomes problematic. Chronic stress leads to heart disease, mostly because of the way that adrenaline impacts blood vessels. We know that we can help mitigate more long-term stress. Regular exercise. Exercise actually increases different happy, healthy neurotransmitters. Getting enough sleep. And then I think one that, you know, I made mention of what 2020 was, but social connections. I feel as if this was never talked about enough, right? Like there's so many aspects of stress that we look at in 2020 that we evaluate, you know, work and income and illness and, you know, all of these aspects. But when you talk about the long term of stress, big stressor events, it has an effect on so many issues. I think about this often. I'll speak for myself in this aspect and others in the next, but for my specific aspect, whenever I have a real cry, so this is not like a, oh my gosh, that little baby, you know, Pampers commercial caught me off guard and it caught me in the mom feels and I had some like tears. This is like real stressed, overwhelmed cry, like a real cry. I will within the next several days get sick. Regardless of what I take or what I do to mitigate it, all of the things, I will almost always find that my body is like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The other aspect too is that if someone walks in to my office and they're like, oh no, guess what? I have shingles. The first thing that I will ask is, what happened? The majority of the times they'll say like, what do you mean? And I say, what happens? Death, divorce, loss of job, change of job, move, ill, like what happened? Usually there's a big life event that will happen that will stress, deplete your immune system. And so obviously cardiovascular with adrenaline and blood vessels, but the secondary aspect that we look at also has to deal with immune system, which is why sickness is one. I see a lot too when you have these like chronic stress monsters. I'm always interested because I'm sure that there probably is a research study out there. I don't know where it is or even how to find it. But here's what I have also found. Prolonged stressful events, I will often see, and this sometimes can be with like a bad marriage or, you know, I look at, you know, obviously a lot of the responsibility through COVID is lack of doctor's appointments. But, you know, I had a family member and I remember thinking they were going through this very, very stressful event with COVID. Their job took on a lot of that stuff. And I said, heart attack or cancer, heart attack or cancer. Like I can just see there's going to be something. And it ended up being cancer. But those are ones when you're like stress, long-term stress has such a magnitude. Now, when we talk more about like the social connections, creating more social connections can mitigate long-term stress, which is one of the things that we actively took away for year and a half when it came to COVID. And reason being is that social connections, being with people, actually leverages your serotonin. Serotonin is your happy, healthy mood regulator, which has a positive effect on your immune system and connections in your brain. So social connections can be with people, it could be romantic, it could be platonic, it could be with your pets, it could just, you know, even an attachment to something that brings you joy or something that you participate in. You know, I have a family member who a lot of hers comes from pickleball, like, you know, participating in pickleball, like that gives her a little dopamine. But here, the body creates higher levels of tachykinin, which is a neurotransmitter, when we are not socially connected enough. Tachykinin symptoms of having higher increase irritability, paranoia, fear, loneliness. So it's not just a like, I feel feels, like it's actually chemically imbalanced. And so I think that's one where a couple actionable steps that we can really look at. Number one is that we start looking at, can we view this stress as something that is more facilitative versus debilitative? And that, you know, I think that's a hard ask depending on the situation that you're at. Right. I think sometimes when we look at stress in terms of like jobs or relationships versus, you know, the first example that comes to mind is like a loss or a illness of a family member, right? Especially if it's more of like a slower degenerative one. I think those are ones that it's hard to come out of that from more of a facilitative standpoint. But depending on what situation you are, just looking at, is this something that has the ability to change our viewpoint on what that looks like? And I know that that is not necessarily in every situation. I have two individuals that I know in the recent who have gone through. One was a very abusive relationship. Another one was a loss of a child. I can't imagine being in either one. One leaned the heaviest into her faith and in Jesus. And the other one is in jail currently, has lost her practicing license for addiction. And so just, you know, I know that not every situation is different. I mean, not every situation is the same. Every situation is different. But just figuring out what is their viewpoint. You know, I see some of these parents who have lost a child, and they take that and think that, goodness, I'm never going to have that happen. And they had advocacy groups, and they fight and all of the things. And it doesn't take away the hurt. It's just figuring out how you make that more of a facilitative stress than anything. Right. Number two, on less of that, you know, because when you're like, how do I manage this stress? Number one is sometimes when you're in this constant overdrive of sympathetic fight or flight, it's figuring out and being very, very intentional about how we activate our parasympathetic, our rest and digest. Now, what I mean by that is there have to be some times, and again, this is in reference to like small business owning stress, so in husband being deployed in active firefights for war stress. So this is, it's different. Everyone's stress is different. This is not loss of a child. But I remember when I went through all the testing and saw that my adrenals were just not doing well. And I said, okay, I'm going to be really mindful of this. Like, I can't take away the stress of owning a new business or the fact that my husband's life is at the will of whatever happens from this tour. But I was like, I'm going to manage. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get a massage. I did like a float therapy. I was listening to all this like calm, peaceful music. And then I went to the bank and someone walked in and was like, hi, I hit your car in the parking lot. And I was like, oh, God's testing me. And I said, yep. Okay. That's all right. We'll take care of it. Thanks for letting me know, you know? And it was just one of those ones, like, I remember just being super intentional about like breathing and taking time to be calm and really being proactive on what I was going to put my focus on things that I could control and things that I couldn't, but really being super mindful. I also had to monitor my caffeine intake, right? Like when we talk about psychological and physiological stress, like caffeine is a stimulant. And so you're like, go, go, go. And we think that it's doing a really great thing. But in reality, if your body's already on this go, go, go because of stress and you give it one more stressor, it's not parlaying you forward. And I say this as a avid coffee lover, so don't come at me for it. I drink coffee now, but I just have to take breaks, you know? And I think the other one is you can support with supplements. No, like you can't. I had a patient the other day who was having a bit of a anxiety panic attack, went to the hospital, they cleared him, wasn't having a heart attack, wasn't having a stroke. They're like, we think it's maybe anxiety. And they're like, what supplement can I take? And I said, right now, I don't think that there's going to be any sort of supplement that you can take that's going to, you can't out supplement an active panic attack, right? Like you have to address the cause of the problem. I think the secondary thing too that I have found that really has supported me a lot is that we have a supplement in our office called Adrenal Balance. It's Pure Path Adrenal Balance. Pure Path is a supplement line that is closest to the source that you can ever get. No dirty fillers, all GMP certified. It has a lot of regenerative organic stress support botanicals. So from rhodiola, ashwagandha, holy basil, ginseng, it has L-theanine, which if you know anything about L-theanine, it's an amino acid typically found in like green or black tea, but it has been found to inhibit cortical neuron excitation. So basically it has, it helps with bind to the glutamic receptors in the brain that has an anti-stress effect. And so it helps promote heavy, healthy levels of GABA, G-A-B-A. It also helps increase dopamine and serotonin. So it helps with relaxation and anxiety. So that's what you can go, you can stop into the office anytime you want. GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. We're located at the corner of 135 and Fairview. Or you can just go to our website, which is Greenwood Family Chiropractic, you know, and you can hop right on there and grab it. The other thing too, that I think is interesting. So one, monitoring stress, how you manage, how are you intentional? So if that means on your drive home, like often when I'm going through more of like increasing my rest and digest, my parasympathetic, when I'm on my drive home, I literally have to listen to calm music. Like There's a deep focus playlist that I listen to. There's no words, just relaxing, that I concentrate on breathing, which now after today I will do different breathing. I usually do box breathing, so now I'll try more of the with the sighs. But truly that makes a difference, increasing that. But adjustments, most people don't know that adjustments can help with cortisol. So published in 2002, the Journal of Manipulative Physiological Therapies, that they looked at the effects of chiropractic adjustments on salivary, so spit related cortisol levels. And so what they found is that cortisol levels subsequently decreased from pre-treatment to 15 minutes after treatment. After treatment, there are progressive decreases in cortisol from the 15 and 30 minute points all the way up until the 60 minute point. So you're like, oh my gosh, I feel so stressed. And you're like, I'm going to get an adjustment. You're like, that sounds crazy. And you're like, it does, but they actually have science to show. And it's not that it's going to take away the stress of a marriage or a job or a diagnosis or a loss, but at least makes it internally more feasible for those external stressors to be handled internally, if that makes sense. So it's just one. Oftentimes people just come in and they come in for headaches, neck pain, and back pain, but overall they just say, I just feel better. And so that's inevitably one when you start addressing and going through, it just gives you an opportunity and ability to manage stress better. So stress can be a good thing. It just depends on how and for how long. So if you want to know more information, don't hesitate to reach out. Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Look forward to next week, but always remember that your power is on.